We're excited to be sponsored by Your Digital Future, a new talent agency specializing in digital training and recruitment.
One of the challenges we see is that finding good marketers is hard. If you don't live and breathe digital marketing, then how do you know where to find these people? What do you ask them? And are they even any good?
Your Digital Future takes that off your hands as an employer. Also, if you're looking for a job in marketing, they work with progressive, candidate-focused brands nationally, so it's worth connecting with them even if you're not looking for a new role right now.
To find out more, visit yourdigitalfuture.co.uk.
Hello and welcome to the More Than Digital Marketing podcast, a podcast about digital marketing and so much more. This week you're joined by me, Lucy.
And me, Becky. I'm back.
And me, Matt, I'm also back.
Yay, it's a three
It's
of
more
us.
Exciting that Matt's back, I'm afraid. Yeah. I've only been gone for 2 weeks. But,
Is this your first?
This is my first one in 23.
Welcome back.
It's first one since Matt's become a father.
Congratulations.
Yeah, exciting
again.
Stuff. I'm just going to pretend that there's bunting and party poppers have gone off.
What are you talking about?
Yeah.
There is.
Put the champagne
down. Surrounded by it all.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, sorry. I've just shattered the illusion for everyone listening.
Yeah, has it been a whirlwind?
Absolutely. Yeah. Sleepless nights. I come into work to rest now. That's the joke, isn't it?
Yeah.
They need to play that in schools for kids don't have babies.
Yeah. That's the thing.
Yes.
But it's all worth it.
Good. Yeah. Well, yeah, we're glad to have you back. Glad to have you back on the podcast.
And hi, Carrie-Anne and baby, if you're listening to us.
Yeah.
Avid listeners.
Avid listeners, yeah.
This could be the white noise that he needs to sleep.
That's the thing, yeah.
Yeah.
Don't say that.
Yeah. It's when his first word is literally chat GPT that you know he's been listening. How have your guys' weeks been?
So busy. I feel like every single week that's all we say.
Yeah,
we just go, how's your week? Oh, just so busy. But it has been really, really busy. In a nice way, I'm still full of event planning. So just released our second keynote speaker today, which is Crystal from Wix. So she's going to be talking about AI, as are we, in moments time. Mm-hmm. Third keynote speaker will be going out on Friday. So
stay tuned.
Yeah, big announcement for that one. The topic is TikTok release for everyone. This doesn't go out till Friday, does it?
No.
So I can tell everyone.
Yeah.
Now.
Go for it.
Okay.
Go
Speaker
for it.
Speaker number three.
Drum roll.
Do one then. It's Ross Middleham. I'm going to have to ask him. Why do I struggle so much with people's surnames? Ross Middleham from the Met Office. So he is creative lead at the Met Office, and he is going to be sharing how in 2022, so last year, the Met Office built TikTok into their strategy, which I think is so cool, actually. Mm-hmm. It's such a like modern new platform for such a like a business which is so well established, and it's been there for such a long time, and you know, it's kind of associated with the government and all of that kind of thing, and yeah, for them to be embracing something like that and really making it work, I think is really cool. So he's going to tell us all about how he did it at the event on the 15th of March. And you can get tickets as podcast listeners using the code PODVIP.
Amazing.
Spell that for me, Matt.
PODVIP.
Perfect.
I got in trouble with producer James for saying too many P sounds 2 weeks ago on the podcast. So apologies if anyone had to turn me down whilst listening in their car or in their ears for saying too many of those sounds. I'm going to try really hard not to this week.
Well, especially as we move on to our next topic, which is chat GPT. How are we with that? Are we good?
We'll have to get one of those like beeping, you know, like when you swear, one of those like beep noise buttons. And then every time I say something that's got a P in it, you can beep me out.
Yeah. Perfect. Yeah. So as I alluded to, we are obviously talking about chat GPT, which is a topic which is considerably sort of growing in momentum as things change sort of week by week. We talked about it last week and already there's been improvements and advancements. Mm. So this is an article from BBC News about a 22-year-old student who has built an app which sniffs out AI-written essays, which is called GPT-0. I said he's only 22, which is absolutely insane. So studying computer science at Princeton University. called Edward Tian, who believes that AI is here to stay, but we need to enter the future responsibly, and has built an app that can determine whether text was written by a human or a bot. What do we think of that?
Wow. I'm actually doing a bit of a Luke on this, you know.
So, Luke. Okay, explain.
Matt's almost just spat out his tea as I said that. basically, where Luke changes his mind every week on what he thinks about things, I'm now also doing that with this. So, at the weekend, I went to a family roast on Sunday night, and I was talking to someone who is doing a master's degree at the moment. And I said to him, because he is using ChatGPT to plan his essays. Mm. So he's kind of putting the brief of the essay in. It's coming back with like a skeleton and some resources and that kind of thing. And then he's kind of using that to write his essay from. So he's not writing his essay with it. And there's nothing being submitted that is purely written by AI or anything like that. But so I said to him, you know, how do you feel about that in terms of like, is that actually going to help you learn? Does that defeat the point of like the skill of constructing an essay and all of this kind of thing? And he had a completely different mindset about it, which was that, so he kind of in the past, I don't think he'd mind me saying this, is not like the biggest academic person. And he finds reading all of the texts that are 25, 30 pages long and all of that really, really hard. And he can't get through them. And because they're so long and they're written in such like complex language and stuff, he kind of can't take it in. And then he says that actually, you know, that hampers his learning. Whereas with ChatGPT, it brings back the resources that he needs to construct his argument, summarizes all the resources in a way that he fully understands, and then he can form his argument from there.
Yep.
So I actually, he did change my mind a bit actually. I'm going to tell him to listen to this because he'll be so pleased that he's managed to influence my brain. But yeah, so I do think that there's definitely positive things to come out of this that like aren't for the kind of mainstream people who get on absolutely fine at school. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think it comes back again, whether it's like, I think Jack and I spoke last week on the podcast about there's a teacher in America who is saying, yeah, go ahead, use it. Like, just tell me that you've used it. Tell me how it's helped you. And we can't sort of deny how useful it is in everyday life compared to this guy who has created something which is like, yep, it can show if it's been completely created or not. So I think it's, yeah, there's definitely a balance to be had. I completely agree that with something like your friend, it's super useful to sort of summarize things like that. People who struggle with high, you know, volumes of text and complicated text. But I personally am against when people just, you know, shove in a title and it writes the essay for them.
Yeah, I think that's the problem, isn't it? If you just give it a prompt and it comes back with an essay and you submit that essay as is, that's where the problem is. But that's why I guess this guy is, the app that he's created is going to combat that. And you know, that means that there'll be less plagiarism. I'm sort of with you guys. I think like using it like to help build out how you're going to plan how to write something is super useful, but then you still need that manual intervention to bring your own sort of spin onto it and your own opinions within that. Sometimes I find it quite difficult to articulate my thoughts in such a way that is going to be understood by like multiple people, dependent on their knowledge. So by sort of just putting prompts in to ChatGPT, I feel like it's still my idea and thought process, but it just helps to construct it in such a way that's going to make it easier for me to explain and then for people to understand. You know, or vice versa, basically.
I agree with that. And I think it's just all in moderation, I would say. I know it says there's some US schools who've completely blocked it on their servers to prevent students from cheating. And I guess that's when it comes back to, it is essentially cheating, I guess, if you do get it to write an entire essay for you. I think of the hours I spent trying not to plagiarize at uni and, you know, getting all the references right. And then you can sort of just chuck something straight in there and it comes out with a fully written essay. But yeah.
I think the other thing in the article here, it says like, and I think we discussed this as well, but there is a worry that it will take jobs away from certain creatives. So like writers, for example, or it said it could, you know, potentially hackers and things like that could write harmful malware. When it comes to like those creative jobs, I think you still need that sort of human flair, essentially, to add things in. I think this app looks at two variables, going by the article, and it's perplexity and burstiness. So perplexity is like how sort of complex and whether or if the sentence structures and things are all the same, and simply similarly burstiness, if it's all the sort of language and sentence structures are all the same, and you know, for want of a better phrase, appear robotic, then it seems like it's going, you know, it has been written by a bot. Whereas like if it's got a bit more of a human touch, there's like more complex sentences and less complex sentences, longer, shorter, things like that. So I think there still is a need for that. But yeah, it's like any other tool that comes in, I guess. I suppose maybe they thought the same about calculators and in the past, like anything to make our lives more efficient and easier and, you know, help us speed things up, I think is a good thing, as long as it's like we've said in the article, as sort of says in the article, it's used responsibly rather than like you fully use it all the time.
Yeah, I mean, for me, that bit about using it responsibly is the bit that I find really scary. So, and I think particularly just moving on to another article, where we've seen Google start talking this week about how they're going to kind of match up against ChatGPT and what they're going to be releasing and what they've invested in and that kind of thing. One of the articles that we read in the Financial Times was about Google investing $300 million in artificial intelligence startup Anthropic. And that's not the only thing that they've done either. So they're obviously trying to kind of cover quite a few bases to work out what their response to this is going to be. But the article called it an AI arms race. And that just scared me so much because I thought, you know what, that's totally right. So many businesses are going to be wanting to be the first to successfully release this, or, you know, and I do think that that does mean that there will be corners cut, and there will be things released that aren't kind of fully tested or fully considered in different ways. And, you know, Google has said in the past that the reason that they haven't been so forthcoming with AI, because they've been looking into it for years and years, is because it does have problems in it that they just haven't been able to iron out yet. So, in the story about Google's other answer to ChatGPT, which is Bard, I'll obviously talk about that in a minute, but that's an article written on wired.com. They've said that both ChatGPT and the Google version Bard, they're both built on versions of AI which are text generation software, which basically just feeds from the text that you put in it in the first place. So it's prone to misinformation, it can replicate bias, so gender bias or racial bias, and it repeats unpleasantries that it finds online, so like racial hatred or speech that you wouldn't want in an article, that kind of thing. And neither has managed to find ways to stop this yet, but we're still going ahead with releasing all these tools and software. And I do think that it's something that's going to benefit the majority more than the minority.
Yeah, I can see. Yeah, I can see what you're saying about if you feed it or prompt it based on your own ideologies and thought process. It's sort of going back to like that whole social echo chamber, doesn't it? Where like it's just going to find the things that you agree with, kind of thing. I find myself going to ChatGPT rather than Google sometimes to like ask a question and things like that, and like the more people that do that,
that's
you're gonna get more misinformation.
That's what Crystal was going to be talking about at our event. So where she is very, very interested in SEO, and she now works at Wix, so obviously a website provider platform, they are really keenly looking into what does AI mean for the future of search, exactly for that reason.
And that's why Google are so invested in both like the time that they're spending on it and also the money that they're investing into it. Just going back to one of the other articles, one of the previous articles, it's talking about how ChatGPT is one of the fastest growing apps in history with 100 million users after just 2 months. And just to put that
insane
in, it's huge growth.
It literally makes me want to cry and not use my computer ever again, honestly.
There was an interesting few stats around just putting that into perspective. So 100 million users after just 2 months for ChatGPT. It took TikTok over 9 months to get that same amount of people. Instagram took 2.5 years, and Spotify took to get 100 million monthly active users 4.5 years. That's all data from SimilarWeb. So you know Spotify, TikTok, Instagram, they're all mm-hmm. massive brands platforms. And you just see how quickly ChatGPT has grown. Yep. It is mad. And they're already rolling out this subscription model as well. So mm-hmm. you can get easier access and faster responses.
Even faster responses.
Than
2 seconds it takes now. Yeah, yeah, it's absolutely nuts. I think UBS said it was averaging 13 million daily unique visitors per day by the end of January.
It's madness.
Which I just can't get my head around that sort of figure, to be quite honest. I mean, I only finally managed to get onto it today after a month of refreshing.
It's because everyone's talking about it, though, aren't they? Yeah. So where I think originally kind of those in the industry, like us, were talking about it, now it is everywhere.
Mm.
And everyone's starting to find kind of new ways to use it and ways that it can be used in their jobs and all of that kind of thing. I mean, Microsoft has now announced a waiting list for ChatGPT integrated into Bing. Well, it's OpenAI integrated into Bing. It's not exactly the same thing. But yeah, they've released a waiting list for if you want to access a variation of Bing that has got AI built into it.
Yeah.
So,
and yeah, Google with their investment and things are looking into ways to bring that into platform as well. It's I think it's really interesting. It'd be interesting to see what Crystal has to say at the event as well, because it does feel like there's, you know, this is probably possibly one of the biggest shifts to happen in terms of search in quite a long time, which is...
I don't think Google would have been expecting it to happen this quickly.
Not as quickly, no.
No, I mean, in the Wired article, which is about Bard, so Google's answer, it talks about... So they're specifically looking with Google. It's not quite the same way that the Microsoft partnership works, but it does identify that because of the amount of users, as we've just talked about, and the amount of data that are in these tools, the kind of cloud capacity that is needed to hold that is absolutely enormous, which means that only the tech giants can get involved, basically. So all of these small startups that are kind of building the AI tools, they need partnerships with these big tech giants in order to host all of this information. So via the clouds. So it looks like Google might have done some kind of like contrary type deal with their version. So they have invested a big amount of money, but it only gives them 10% of the startup, whereas with Microsoft, obviously, that's almost 50%, isn't it? The type of technology that the Google version, so Bard, and then also ChatGPT is built on, neither can be updated like very easily, apparently. So I'm not even going to attempt to explain because I don't have any idea, but apparently the way that it's built, you like feed it a database and then build loads of stuff around it, so updating the database means that all the stuff you built around it doesn't work anymore.
Sure.
It breaks it. So I think, yeah, obviously they are going to have to build new variations of this so that it can kind of feed from live data at some point, but at the moment both variations feed from the information that's put in the first place. So I do think that means that the reinventing of web search is probably further away than we think it is. It feels like it's literally coming next month, but I don't think it will, to be honest.
No, it's interesting you say that. Yeah. In a few years.
Yeah.
It'll be. But this, like, there's that obviously shift. I mean, we know that Meta are really interested in AI and things like that in a slightly different way through the metaverse. And there's another article sort of later on where they talk about that's sort of their focus point. Microsoft, obviously, are sort of, earlier to the party, I guess, than like Google. But yeah, it's, now Google are in there. It's just going to keep ramping up. And this, I guess it's just going to snowball and over the next few months. And
the Google version, so Bard, they also have talked about, not immediately, but they will have an API on theirs, which will mean, and I know we did talk about this with ChatGPT as well, but I don't think it's officially been put out there, whereas with Google's announcement, they have officially said that there will be an API for developers to build on. So anyone theoretically could kind of take the base platform that Bard is built on and then build something else on top of it. So I think you'll see lots of kind of little tools coming out which are built from this AI that will be like hacks for various things and all of that kind of thing.
Yeah, I am interested to see the different avenues it will go down. Like you say, if they can, people can develop it in their own ways. It'll be interesting to see sort of if this is the base and that's how far it's come in a few months, in a few years, like where the branches it could sort of have off it by then.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just already thinking like, yeah, weather, news updates, things like that,
yeah.
Like recipes, step by step, or all those kind of things that,
yeah,
interesting.
Yeah, don't know how on earth people build it. My mind does not work like that, but.
No. Can't wait to use it.
Yeah, exactly, can't wait to use
Love
it, as long as it's helpful
it.
To us,
yeah.
Exactly.
It's been super helpful, and it's also helped create some Louis Theroux style raps.
It has, Luke did
shanties.
Say that to me today. He said, Lucy, you're in charge of getting a rap in the podcast,
oh,
which I have
want
failed.
A rap.
I haven't done so.
Well, What have you done though this afternoon?
Are you referring to the lunchtime?
No, I'm talking about the sea shanty.
The sea shanty?
Have you not seen this?
No.
I thought this was you. Someone in the office
oh,
this afternoon.
Jack. It was Jack. Sorry, yes.
Has got I'm not going to sing it. but yeah, ChatGPT has written us a sea shanty about optics.
Someone should
say. I think Jack is going to be singing it live at the podcast, isn't that right?
Yeah, is that on the podcast
on the stage?
Yeah, podcast live
it?
On the 15th of March.
Well, okay.
If he hadn't signed up before, when he listens to this, he will be. It was quite good, to be fair. Yeah, I thought you were referring to the fact that I'd had my first Greg sausage roll today. Which was a
That would have been quite a, quite a link.
A very loose tangent.
Yeah, that's a tangent. Yeah. Anyway, it was very nice. But yeah.
Sorry, I do just actually want to add on to that. Lucy has also never had a scotch egg, listener.
No. It's
mind-blowing.
The silence in this room is going to be echoed by everyone outside listening
I'm sorry, I'm too busy eating my
first Greg sausage roll today and never had a scotch egg.
No.
I'll make you some air-fried ones.
Oh,
goodness, that does sound good.
Matt's offering air-fried scotch
eggs.
Right,
it's on the podcast.
Fantastic.
I am expecting it next week. Maybe our podcast snack from now on, Matt's air-fried scotch eggs.
Do you think this is another spin-off? So where we've promised the movie and film podcast episode for such a long time. I've been threatened by Jack that he's going to stand on the stage at the event and get everyone to shout out movies and I can say whether I have or haven't seen them.
Have you seen Hamilton yet?
No.
No, neither have I. Maybe we both need to just watch it together.
And I still haven't seen Jurassic Park either.
No,
Lucy.
Neither have I. I only learned that there was more than one Star Wars today.
Oh, multiple, that was very funny.
Wow.
Multiple Star Wars.
Wow.
Anyway, we've gone off on a real tangent here.
We have.
Back to digital marketing. And our next article is about how, still kind of relating back to Google as ever, that the Google and Meta duopoly continues to sort of creak as Amazon and Apple ascend. So this is an article from DigiDay, which talks about Google's total ad revenues are down for the second time in the company's history. And Meta posted its first annual revenue loss in ad revenue as well, while Amazon and Apple's were on the up by 23 and 24% respectively. So there, this is due to multiple reasons, sort of Amazon integrating its ads business more closely into its cloud technologies, obviously YouTube being impacted by TikTok and sort of short form videos that way. But it's interesting that it seems to sort of, be turning the tides on sort of the big two, I guess.
The big two.
The big two.
I think that's a big two, duopoly, big words. So I think we know that Google and Meta have absolutely dominated in terms of where people are spending their money when it comes to online advertising. So like paid search, Facebook ads, all that kind of Instagram ads, all those kinds of things. What's interesting here is, there's a definite shift. Don't get me wrong. And like it says this in the article as well, like Google and Meta are still raking in a lot more money than Amazon and Apple's ad revenue platforms are. But this sort of, where they're, Amazon and Apple are seeing double-digit growth, Google and Meta are seeing that drop. So they're just taking more share of that market. And like you said, what's interesting is Amazon sort of integrating more closely with its cloud technologies. So it's sort of more, I guess, becoming more efficient and easier to sort of use and then also like target different people. And Amazon, I guess, has a lot, the way it works is more sort of linked to product search and things like that rather than like keyword searches, etc. So they've got a lot of like intent and purchaser buyer behavior, I guess, just due to like the what the platform is and generally sort of Amazon. So you might be able to be a bit more efficient with your spending and getting a better cost per acquisition there. And also Apple, you know, with the rollout of their kind of making it harder to track people and all those kinds of things, like are just sort of gatekeeping that. The data that they have on people. So again, people are going, okay, I to reach those people, I have to use Apple's ad platform. So yeah, it's quite interesting the ways in which those companies are working to see those increases in ad revenue.
I do think this is, in terms of kind of making more platforms for people to put their ads on and that kind of thing, I think it goes back to that classic kind of societal thing that we see over history where everything kind of gets centralized to make it easier and then everyone worries that someone's got more control and then everything gets split out again and devolved into smaller things and then we just go back round into the loop in 100 years time or whatever. But it does feel a little bit like that. So I do think from like a, if you think about how we work with our clients, having more places to put your ads is good in one way, because obviously you can kind of split your bet and reach people in lots of different places and hopefully be a bit more niche about it and that kind of thing. But also I do think that especially smaller businesses will have less opportunity to make an impact perhaps. Because by splitting there, if you've got only a limited amount of ad spend and then you have to split it across four or five platforms rather than just Google, like you would normally maybe, yeah. That is definitely going to present challenges, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's the same when we're thinking about like paid search and you have your overall budget and then you put a proportion into Google ads and you put a proportion into Bing ads. Mm-hmm. You know, 9 times out of 10, 90% is going into Google, isn't it? And yeah, it's the same kind of thing. Like if you have the budgets to stretch across, then you would do that same kind of thing and split it out proportionately because, yeah, like you say, that's, you follow where the sort of the users are and where you're going to get most benefit from. So yeah, I don't think it's going to change too much in terms of like smaller businesses and things like that. And it's still going to be the Google and the Meta. But I think it's just showcasing that that shift might be starting to happen and that, you know, in years to come, maybe that, you know, there'll be more of an even playing field and it'll be harder to determine where you put that budget. And it's going to be based on like, yeah, personas, your product and those kind of things and what you actually want to get from it, whether it's brand awareness or whether it's actually just like conversion data and things like that.
I guess this is kind of going back to slightly more traditional marketing where you did really have to think about where you were going to put your message to try and get it out to the right people and at the right time and all of that kind of thing. I think we are kind of a bit spoiled at the moment as marketers, as in all this data is available to us. There's AI built into loads of the ad platforms. And, you know, I'm absolutely not saying that the team that do paid adverts don't kind of have to really know what they're doing, but there definitely is a lot of kind of machine input and it's easier than it would have been 20 years ago, for example.
Yeah, I think you're right. Just pulling out a quote from the article there, essentially what, so this is from Paul Werner, who's the principal analyst at the advertising and media practice at Insider Intelligence. He said the ad market overall is going to become more diverse across more players, with smaller sized businesses to traditional duopoly of Google and Meta. So it goes back to, yeah, to what we're saying, and it goes back to that sort of more old school thing of thinking, right, where am I going to get the best bang for my buck here in terms of the advertising. Another interesting point that was made at the end of that article was a quote from Mark Zuckerberg. I won't read the quotes out, but essentially just alluding to the fact that actually they're pushing more towards the AI stuff and investing more in that. And again, we've already talked about that with Google and ChatGPT and Microsoft and Bing's sort of answer to that as well. So it might be that, you know, it's just not where the focus is at the moment and they're looking at their growth areas for those businesses. As a priority as well. So there probably is a bit of that.
Thanks. I've nothing
to add. Well summarised. Yeah. Let's move on then to Twitter. And this is a news from Social Media Today that Twitter is cancelling its free access to its API, which will shut down hundreds of apps. So it's from the 9th of February, is cutting off free access to its API in a bid to clear the platform up. An Elon Musk way to increase revenue, but it could affect things like free analytics apps and things like management tools and schedulers. And in his words, he said the free API is being abused badly right now by bot scammers and opinion manipulators. So they now want people to pay potentially $100 a month for API access and ID verification to clean things up. But developers have pointed out that bots spreading spam don't actually use the official API. So actually weeding out that sort of spam might not be as successful as he thinks it's going to be. And it's kind of another version or another example of Elon Musk sort of using his control, but maybe not potentially in the right way.
I mean, the fact that he's saying it's being abused by opinion manipulators.
Yes, it's quite ironic, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, there are other tools, obviously, like it says in the article, Hootsuite and Sprout Social already pay, so they'll be unlikely to be unaffected. But it's the other ones which will be affected, and it's sort of, yeah, his way of showing control over it once again and just cutting it down to people being verified and people having to pay for it.
Well, I mean, he's already, because so many developers like backlashed on this, he's already come back and said, oh, all right, okay, we'll change the API instead. So there will be a free API, but it'll only be for people that are providing good content. You know, how he's going to determine that, I don't know.
Yeah. Him personally reading every single
That's the thing, can you imagine? Yeah.
Does it match his opinion?
Oh, no. Next. Yeah.
Yeah, next one.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, this kind of thing, I think this would have been good if Luke was here for this, because he's quite kind of technical on this sort of thing, isn't he? I don't really understand it, to be honest. So if any listeners are there thinking, I don't know how this API works or what's built on the top of it, me neither. So the only things that I know about are things like Hootsuite. So obviously that takes the Twitter kind of data feed, and then you can schedule your things in it, and then it will feed the data back to Twitter and that kind of thing, so you're never actually interacting with the Twitter interface. So I imagine that it's other things like that, but beyond that, I don't really know how this will affect things.
I think those smaller scale versions of Hootsuite and Sprout Social, so essentially anything that provides any like analytics on Twitter that's like smaller scale, or any sort of management tools and schedulers similar to Hootsuite, but maybe like more sort of startup-y or more in their infancy, essentially, compared to those bigger versions.
So do we think that so where you have like third-party analytics platforms where it kind of draws all the different data in from different places and then puts it all in one place, so like agency analytics, or where I used to work, we were working on something similar. So basically, obviously, in Google Analytics, you can't see like Twitter data. So there's lots of businesses building analytics platforms where you can plug in all of the different APIs from the different tools, and then it will populate all of your data in one place on one dashboard for you, which obviously sounds in theory brilliant. Like anyone that could have access to one of those would want it. But yeah, does this mean that those kind of analytics dashboards won't be able to be used anymore, do we think?
No, I think it goes back to the Hootsuite thing as well. So those larger, with the larger versions that do that, the companies that do that, similar to Hootsuite, I'm guessing are probably just pay for those API access and like the feeds to be able to do that.
Right. So only the big ones will be able to do it, basically.
Yeah, essentially. I think it's cornering that market. I think like a lot of people have said, it's those kind of things will probably be unaffected based on what it's saying here. One thing that is interesting is that it, for those businesses though, they might have to just update their business model. So I think a lot of them give free trials or free access to certain things, but it's likely that with this update that those kind of free trials and free access type tools won't be available anymore, because, you know, it's just not, it doesn't make sense for them financially to be able to do that if they're paying X amount for the API access. So that's how those might be affected. So it's more around business models than actually like what they can provide. It's a lot of, I think, like the smaller scale or like, yeah, developers that build tools outside, you know, that essentially help people, but that aren't sort of massive tools that, you know, they've just built for fun, I guess,
or
you know, just to provide, you know, a service to people. It's going to be harder for those people to be able to afford to do this. I was reading in that article that there's a guy that's got, he's built however many bots that provide certain content, and it would cost him like several thousand dollars a year to be able to update, keep that updated and have this access. So things like that will just like disappear. So that, yeah, the environment will just get, it will just be the bigger brands within that.
Yeah, and it says it's not just, doesn't just affect bot developers either. There's like lots of student developers who don't have a budget to pay a monthly fee. And they did used to have an API with special access for academics. But again, this might not be the case under new API rules. So I think it's still a grey area as to what and what will and won't be allowed in the future and sort of specifically. But a lot of, you know, Twitter is used for entertainment. And there's a couple of funny accounts, like Matt was mentioning, sort of on the article about a restaurant bot which tweets random photos of restaurants. They sort of, you know, will all be cleared off, basically.
There was also one that was, you know, those like pet cam things?
Yeah.
And there was one set up at a cat flap to say whether the cat had come in or the cat had gone out.
That's quite funny.
So yeah, it would just provide updates. And it had loads of engagement and things like that.
Yeah.
And it was just a really silly thing. But yeah, that kind of thing, like the person that's created that's not going to pay.
No.
To be able to keep producing that kind of content. So
no,
yeah, there's like the entertainment factor.
I don't
and
think
some...
the world is going to be less because we can't see whether the cat's
coming.
That's what
I use Twitter for, to be honest.
Yeah.
When I did have Twitter,
to see
I don't
whether
now.
The cat's coming
not
or not.
Specifically to see whether Pepito,
I mean,
the cat had gone home.
Wasn't,
but for entertainment. Yeah.
Wasn't YouTube just built on cat content and that's right?
yeah.
Like just cat videos.
Cats are all in the way, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, they're saying like entertainment shouldn't be monetized, essentially.
No, which I do agree with.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See what happens then, shall we?
I know, yeah.
I mean, it's the other thing, the fact that within like a week of that initial tweet, it was within a matter of days, maybe even the day after, he's already gone back on what he said, just shows that he's still got this gung-ho approach and isn't really thinking about like the bigger picture and things like that. And yeah, it's
classic.
Mad.
Classic.
I'm glad that we're still talking about him now, even though I haven't been on the podcast
for
what feels like ages. It's like,
I'm sure he'll still be around when he makes another random decision.
Yeah,
yeah. Fantastic. So moving on from cats and APIs more generally, talking about Apple.
Although it's about TikTok, isn't it?
Well, true.
And I'm sure there's cat videos on TikTok.
We've spoken about this on previous podcasts about how TikTok, like especially the US government, wants it removed from America, and there's certain schools which will no longer, students won't be able to access it sort of on the Wi-Fi. And this article states that Apple and Google face mounting pressure to remove TikTok from their app stores immediately from Senator for Colorado Michael Bennett. And as I said, since January, Republicans and Democrats have been calling for their colleagues or administration to sort of impose stricter data collection restrictions due to potential risk to US national security, as obviously TikTok is a Chinese app. So it's just sort of facing mounting pressure on that sort of week on week of what they will decide. As I think numerous states, I can't remember how many now, have already banned it. So it's just whether it becomes a fully imposed nationwide thing.
Yeah. This has been going on for a long time, hasn't it? I think in the article from The Verge, it's sort of since the Trump administration came over, and yeah, to do with this US national security, which is obviously quite serious and quite important. But you know, we know that there's a lot of noise around data protection and data privacy generally. If you know there are breaches, and it seems like there have been like instances where like data has been used by ByteDance, which is the company that owns TikTok, I think. If you know people are having their data accessed through like from that company, then obviously like there are quite serious breaches here, and like it is a serious issue. What was interesting within the TikTok within the article is like they're obviously really working hard to move a lot of data to US-based servers, which is a project known as Project Texas. But although sort of they're working on those kind of initiatives, there's still a lot of momentum on to ban the app, essentially.
Mm. I don't think it'll ever get to that point.
Mm. You heard it here first.
It's so big.
Yeah, it is.
It's like, huge. The public won't accept that, I don't think. I think the point is that they're pushing for a ban so that the back step is restrictions, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So they're not, I don't think they'll be hoping to actually achieve a ban, because that, you know, the censorship that would be involved in that is just ridiculous. Like, you know, how in China, for example, where they are kind of censored on various things, like Facebook, for example, like the world sees that as a really negative thing, don't they? So there's no way that America is going to ban TikTok. But I do think that they're using it as a kind of negotiation point of, okay, well, this is what we want, but instead we could have restrictions. And I can definitely see that going in. I think, you know, the data breaches that have been reported in this article anyway, are very small. So I don't think it's about what's actually happened already. It's more about the potential of what it could do. So obviously an app that's grown so quickly, which is owned by China or a business in China, the access to that level of data, regardless of whether legally they're allowed to or not, I mean, they could do whatever they wanted with it, really.
Mm. Yeah. I think, fast growth, 100 million users in 9 months, I think we said at the top.
Just a bit quick.
I think, sort of what you're saying, you said about sort of the users, but also thinking about like the content creators as well, mm-hmm. like, and the amount of money that they're probably generating off like content they're creating and things like that, then I think there'd be a lot of call for... this not to happen, essentially. So I think you're right. Probably restrictions. I wonder if there's going to be some kind of like TikTok trade deal where if they move...
TikTok trade deal.
Where if they move move into these US-based servers, then maybe America takes a portion of the advertising revenue or something. Mm.
Yep. Okay. I'm just looking at how many we've got left. What do we think? So there was one article from Systrix, which I'm not going to go into it because it was really long. And if I'm honest, there were some really good tables and graphs in there that were a bit more interesting than the words. But basically, Systrix, so obviously big kind of data warehouse, they have released the 2022 kind of SEO visibility changes list. And I thought what was really interesting was within the top 15, so Shopify have had 500% increased change in their searches over the last search visibility over the last year. So obviously big e-commerce platform. And some of the other ones in that list, lots of them are database related. And I did think, obviously thinking about the AI side of things, database websites are going to be a lot more useful to AI than other websites going forward. So I do think it's really interesting that database websites are kind of growing in visibility and search volume and that kind of thing. And there's quite a lot of music and video players on that list as well. So an interesting one if you're interested in SEO and big companies, basically.
I will, I'll touch on that very quickly because I think, there's a good conclusion which sort of alludes to like possible reasons. So the Shopify, and I think Etsy was also mentioned as well, is related to how they're handling like the href lang tags. So serving it to essentially a localized user, which has really helped them. There's been a lot of fluctuation in search engine results pages, and there's been a lot of updates. I think I read not as many updates in 21, but we had like things like the helpful content update. There was an update to Google EEAT, so experience, authorities, and trust. Sorry, thank you. There's a lot of in here, essentially just boiling it down. A lot of impacts from based on content and the useful and usefulness and relevance of content, and yeah, the experience that people are having on the site based on that. So yeah, it still says in here content is still very much king. So still super important to produce helpful, high quality, probably more important now based on like how Google seems to be like prioritizing this kind of thing. And then also, yeah, obviously going back to the links as well. But I just thought that was interesting to boil down the possible reasons why those websites might be seeing an impact. And it's things like that could help also businesses of all sizes. So again, thinking about our clients, I thought worth just digging into that.
Yeah, and it says again, one other point in the conclusion, which links quite nicely to the next article, is that Google's algorithms are tweaking to aid users during the cost of living crisis, which sort of links quite nicely to the article from Modern Retail, which
makes
states
this our
that,
final one.
Which states that brands are promoting affordability in their marketing amid inflation, which obviously makes sense that they're tweaking their language and sort of what they're promoting to, I don't know, just really sort of aid users during this cost of living crisis, and just sort of reflecting what everyone is experiencing at this current time.
Yeah, so the article talks about a couple of different brands which are basically already kind of in this field, but they are making this their priority in terms of their messaging. So there was a brand in there who did like designer clothing rental and things like that. So obviously that's sustainable, it's better to it's better for kind of the world and also your bank balance for renting expensive handbags rather than buying one. But I did think that this posed us with a really interesting digital dilemma for the week, actually. In that, so yes, right now the climate is, if you were going to take a sweeping generalization for the country, maybe the Western world, is obviously recession, cost of living, need to promote affordability, all of that kind of thing. And brands who focus in on that are seeing an uptick in traffic and engagement. But when your brand doesn't have those core values, what do you do?
Stick to your values, I think, is one. And just call, I think there are ways that you can show value without it being monetary value. I think it's really important that, yeah, you don't you know, completely drop your what you stand for as a brand if you're a brand that doesn't do sales for particular reasons. You don't want to sort of cheapen your brand, because I think as soon as you get into that market of trying to chase your tail and trying to chase the money,
you can't go back up again after,
can
you?
So and then you become known as a brand that is like a discounty brand. We all go back to like DFS and thinking about, you know, they are just a sale.
Does
anyone ever pay full price?
It ends on Friday, Matt.
Oh, does it? Yeah, of course. Yeah,
go down there.
Yeah, you sort of start getting into that cycle. So I think it's showing value in other ways, and also maybe calling out some of like your other USPs, but also like, are you particularly focused on sustainability? Have you got other things I guess within your wheelhouse that you can talk about, and just continue to be there and visible for when people are ready to buy. Is my thought on that.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I do think that there's a difference between like cost and value, definitely. So if you're, and we were talking about this earlier with, I'm going to have to just be careful of how I explain this. We had a client workshop this morning, basically, where we were talking about marketing strategy. And one of the brands that we referenced actually was Patagonia. So Patagonia products are more expensive than if you bought like a fleece from H&M. Buying a fleece from Patagonia will cost you more. But their thing is that like the fast fashion side is bad. You should buy something which is a bit more expensive, but really well made, because it lasts and the value of it is therefore greater. And the value of kind of what the company does with its profits and all of that kind of thing, you know, you're more likely to spend a little bit more if you think that it benefits you in the long term. And then also you've got that kind of like corporate social responsibility kind of element. So yeah, I do think focusing on value and what you're kind of offering the customer and the world is more important than cost.
Yeah. Mm.
Or the price.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think the Patagonia one is a really interesting example. I don't know if they do the same thing or a similar thing as what Barber do. I think Barber, with their wax jackets, so again, a really big heritage brand in the UK, more expensive than, you know, if you're just going down to the probably like, I don't know, yeah, like say H&M or certainly Primark, things like that, you're going to pay more. But if then you're, the wax coating comes off your jacket, or it's sort of, it needs a bit of repair and restoration, I think it's a free service. Mm. Once you, like, if you bought it directly from Barber, it's then a free service, like, over time. So right. Actually the lifetime value that you're getting is much higher, because if you bought it from elsewhere, you're just going to have to buy a new coat.
Yeah. It's like a bag for life on a bigger scale.
Yeah.
Patagonia do life. Do that. They will, like, you can send your coat off, they'll repair it, like, get it
Sorry,
back
who
to
do
you.
That?
Patagonia.
Okay.
So they basically want you to buy one coat, and that's obviously what you'd think would be against what a retailer would want. They'd want you to buy lots, but Patagonia very sort of focused on people and good value for money, as you say. It is a high cost, but the value you get back from it is also a really high return.
Yeah, but that's leaning into the values while also still
for
maintaining
sure.
Those values of sustainability that, like, Patagonia is obviously famous for.
Yeah I mean, let's take a consumer product maybe as an example. So obviously, like, in the kind of travel industry and all of that kind of thing, I guess you can lean into the experience of it, couldn't you? But things like, I don't know, like, I mean, we work with a couple of alcohol brands. I think this is something that it's such a difficult one. Because, you know, you can see companies, especially when sales are decreasing, they go, their immediate thought is, well, we need to sell more. And you can see them going, oh, well, let's just drop the price a little bit. That's probably what it is.
Yeah, no, I understand. Yeah, I understand what you're saying. It's leaning in just into the values isn't going to work for everyone. It's
authentically important, though, isn't it?
Yeah,
I guess.
Yeah.
But I mean, we don't have the answers to everything. Don't worry.
No, exactly. But are there other things that you can do, like... I don't know, instead of dropping the price, is like a limited time promotion to buy one, get one free, or buy one and you get again, going back to like sustainability, like you get something in the community or whatever it is, those kind of things.
We were talking earlier a bit about experience buying, and also kind of explaining why your product is more expensive than the one you could buy in Tesco. So whether that is kind of adding into the experience of buying it. So, you know, if it's a like handcrafted gin, then write that, explain it, who crafted it, put their name on it, you know, put something in the box that says this was created on this day at this location, like make it an experience of buying that product rather than, here's a bottle of gin that you could put next to a bottle of gin from Tesco that was half the price.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, for sure.
Okay.
Yeah. Good conclusion to end on, I think.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Should we go and have a gin?
Yeah, let's go and have a gin. Yeah, yeah. Bottoms up. No, thanks, guys. It's been a really good podcast. I've enjoyed being back. I think we've only done one of the podcasts, all of us three, so it's been good to do it again.
Yeah, and good to be back in the seat.
100%. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, look forward to many more. Perfect. Cool. Well, thanks very much.
Have a good week, everyone.
Have a good week. See you next time.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. More Than Digital Marketing is released every Friday, ready for your weekend listening. So please do rate and subscribe so you don't miss an episode.
You can follow us on Twitter using @OpticSolutions. And if you want to get in touch directly, you can do so using podcast@opticsolutions.co.uk.
Thanks for listening and see you next week.